Mr. Whittaker, Reel 17. You're telling me how you first heard the news you were promoted to Lance Sergeant while you were at Beni Yousef.
Yes, we've been there. I don't know how long we need to. The battery clerk called in and said, "Old Pete asked me to let you see these orders before you put them up." And I was quite astonished. My name on the bottom there, promotions. 894729 equity and Lance Sergeant, and so I was really pleased with myself with that. As I say, it really did. Sergeant in the South, that's as hard, what more did anyone ask? And particularly doing the job I was, which wasn't on the establishment.
Now, you mentioned off the tape, you had the last meal with your...
Oh, yes.
This would be the... Because that's a big divide between being a bombardier and being a Lance Sergeant.
Yes.
You've gone from, you know...
I went into the mess hall, the ordinary on the ranks place, and told all the mates, I said, this is it, lads. I said, from now on, kidding them. And they were all full of congratulations, abuse right, left and centre, and lots of remarks about Major Birkin's predilections, I should say, and such like, really objectionable things. But anyway, by and large, they were quite pleased.
The remarks weren't real, they were jokes.
They were jokes. They'd accepted that I wasn't there because of any favours he owed me. I think a lot of them thought I was mad, in fact. So I said, why don't you stay back with the guns where it's safe? But no, it was, as I said, I liked it. And particularly, as I say, being with the mates and at the centre of things.
Now, would you go into the sergeant's mess for the first time as well at Beni Yousef?
That day, they had dinner at night. And cost me a fortune. I didn't realise that all the blighters said, it's traditional that your first time when you pay for all the drink. It was surprising how many friends I've got that night. Luckily,
was it a real tradition?
Well, I couldn't say. I can't remember really, but I know it did for me. As I say, I know they. I didn't mind anyway. I was there, and as I say, all the other friends. Dennis Fiddleton, the signal sergeant, he'd gone to Octave, so Fred Langford, who joined with me, he'd been made signal sergeant. Spud had gone to Octave, Les Marshall, so Les Marshall was a sergeant. I think at the time, the only one I was even above, I think Dave Tidwell, who later went on to, I think he went battery quartermaster, something like that. I think at that time I was one rank above him, so
you'd caught up with them. And so you were back together with them, in a sense.
But as I say, doing it
twice. And what was the sergeant's mess like then? What did it offer? What was it like?
They were a bit more. They weren't. They were explaining to me that if it was peacetime, I'd have to wear you'd wear a tie and all this. But there, you had to be properly. You couldn't go into meeting, particularly at night. At lunchtime, you could go in and you're working, but not your overalls. They were semi-official. At night, you had to be decently dressed, slacks. You couldn't wear your shorts after 5 o'clock or something anyway. But you had to wear your, you had to have your belt.
So you'd eaten the mess at Beni Yousef. What was the food better?
Somebody had waited on you. And the food was, it was a bit better. And it was a bit more civil, there weren't so many of you.
Why was the food better? Was it the best food, or was it just that you...
Same food, better prepared, a bit better served up, which it's probably an illusion, it's probably being, it made you feel a bit better. I should tell you that the next day, I was brought back to Earth, because I was immediately told that I was Camp Orderly Sergeant, which started at midday one day and finished midday the next.
And what did that entail?
They had a camp orderly officer and you had to go around the whole camp. You had to see that the latrines were clean, that the mattress were all open on time, and the people were behaving themselves. If there were any complaints about anything on the camp, that the various army officers would, from the other regiments would it, you had to see to that. And I found that the army officer went round with you in the morning, and last thing at night, and then you saw him the next day to sign off, and you were on your own. And the first, oh, in the evening, we made a round, as I said, the latrines were all right, but in the evening, when we made a round of the nappies, I found to my horror that one of them, was it the tank regiment, Irish Hussars, and me, knowing I liked the old pipe or something, I thought, Irishman, and I've got to be here on my own at closing time. And I was supposed to make one round during the opening hours before closing, which I did. And there, in one of them, I was absolutely, as I say, a chap came up to me and said, I had a band on, you know, on this sergeant. And, so my beer's flat, oh, my heart sank. When I tasted it, thought it was. So I was able to go to the NAFTA manager and say, look, mate, you know, better replace this, taste it, which, no, I forget their, I think they had a European, an English manager, and a lot of native assistants, but that was the only, and although I came in, I must admit, in the Irish, as I was left, I came in for a lot of stick at night. I was only fairly small, and all these Irishmen, oh, come on, sir, keep her open another hour, you know. But they were pretty well. I felt a huge lot of relief though when I'd seen them finally closing down, at least, if not, you know, at least they were having the last drinks. But it was a, I thought it was a bit. Thick, chucking me in at the deep end like that, and they're not. Of course, I found out the next day they knew darn well what they were doing, and of course, I followed it up with Ordnance Sergeant for the battery, which, as I said, they really just to they let me know.
That wouldn't be as bad. Just
wasn't as bad, but the other thing was, particularly with my voice, of course, trying to shout orders to all these boats on parade.
What did you have to do as orderly side for the battery? Much will tell me, sorry.
They'd line them all up, get them all ready for parade, then you would go round and ask the sergeant major and everything if they were ready for parade. Yes. Then you'd go and tell the orderly officer, battery ready for inspection, sir. And he'd go round and you'd walk round after them at the tail end. I think he just had an armband, but he carried a stick to show you all. And but they and then they'd all march off, and the only duty then they'd leave you totally on your own, the only sergeant, to dismiss the battery to the duties. And the only bit of revenge I could have, I always remember, which it pleased me, but it didn't do much else. When I marched them off, instead of using the usual thing, saying, by the left, you know, battery, do you, I forget whether they said, to your duties, battery, and I said, by the, I can always remember saying, by the centre, quick march, which I was called in later, and when he said, by the centre, I'd heard the guards do that, so somewhere up, they were part of the camp, but it was as I say, at least it showed I was independent. Those first 2 days, as I say, it was a bit, it was a good introduction.
Now, getting back to the mess, were there any mess traditions other than that you had to buy the first the drinks? I mean, like in an officer's mess, they sometimes have traditions.
Not that I can remember, because as I say, this was, in Egypt, and they hadn't got a lot of. They hadn't got cutlery and silverware and things. But they did expect you to be, as I say, they did expect you to be there, and certain one or two, and they'd have they'd invite officers into the sergeant's mess maybe one night in the week when they'd want you to be there.
And what would those dudes be like?
Oh, they'd just come in after you'd have a few drinks and a chat. The officers were a bit more informal than they were when they were the other ranks there, you know. They'd probably call you, they'd probably be able to call you Billy Christie, and that was one of just Whittaker, or at least they'd call you Whittaker instead of Sergeant, you know. But, and you also had to, they'd all, they'd do things like saying grace, you know, the RSM, or the, whatever it is. Senior Sergeant Major, Warrant Officer, and call you to war, you know.
Was there much drinking? And what was the favourite drink?
Beer, mostly, as far as we were concerned.
Not whiskey?
We didn't drink much spirits, no. Occasionally.
And what sort of beer would you get in the Sergeant's Mess? I mean, was it bottled or draft?
Bottled. It was all bottled out there. Stella. They had some Canadian stuff called the Black Horse, you can guess what they call that. But it was, none of it was ever, you know, it was native stuff, not English, not draft stuff.
Was it strong?
Fairly strong. Going into Cairo, the favourite drink in Cairo was Pimm's, amongst my particular cronies. I was still allowed to go out with, you know, my pals then were bombardiers, and you could still, you know, they didn't object to mixing with them, but they said, well, you know, not to, unless the gun team was together, they didn't mind it, but they preferred you to, it wasn't laid down, but they...
So you could drink with bombardiers, but not with gunners?
Not unless, as I say, it was a thing laid on.
What else would be in the sergeant's mess? Would they have seats, comfortable chairs?
And yes, they had chairs, and there was somewhere to sit in rather than go up to the naffy.
What about games?
Darts, some cards. I played mainly darts. Usually involved gambling too. They used to play teams, which paid for the drinks when I say gambling. Might be a few actors, as we call them, you know, casters, whatever, on each game. We've mainly darts, so say some played cards. There was one or two, which I didn't do it at the time. There were some of the, what should I say, the more sensible of them, senior, played bridge.
Now, what about, this would be where you've really came into contact with the RSM and people. Who was the RSM at the time? Do you remember? How did you get on with the senior NCOs now you were mixing with them?
Quite well. Used to take the mick out of me quite a lot because they said I was neither fish, flesh, if I wasn't a governor, I wasn't a signaler, I wasn't a specialist. You know, in their own, I can remember someone saying I did F4. Which my usual reply was, I've earned it. But, as I say, I was and wasn't all, we were, on the duty side, we were beginning to work out, Major Birkin was telling me the new procedure where we're going to work with these, the mobile columns. So now, we were actually doing some
training. Yeah, one, just to interrupt to ask, now at this time there were some new developments because the V battery was formed.
Yes.
And then 520.
Yes, this was a huge, this was a massive reorganisation. We got, instead of two batteries to the regiment, we were told there were going to be three batteries. And they're going to call the new battery V battery. Until it got an official number. Which you might have forgotten what number it was.
520.
Oh yeah, 520. Like the second month, I think. That was 150, wasn't it? That's mile, but it was called V Batter for a time. And what they did, instead of, it was going to be a complete new battery, there was a whole lot of new people, and of course there's quite a lot of promotion going.
Do you think that might be part of the reason you got promoted round about that time?
No, I think if I could, I said to boast a bit, I think I'd found my niche in life. I think as a personal assistant, you know, because I knew how to be, what should I say, not servile, but I could run errands. I'd begun to fall into the pattern and, you know, and get on with people. But of course they took one of our troops from us and gave us a complete new troop, one troop from 426. They formed up into the new battery, which consists of two troops. And then, of course, we got a brand new troop. Lots of new people, new officers. As I say, it was a real upheaval. And of course, they were doing a lot of sorting out of people, you know, who does what. My friend then, Fred Langford, he'd been made up to signal sergeant. I had quite a bit to do with him because, I mean, it meant making sure we got new signalers. And that, you know, this was the sort of thing I was always. And Major Burke was asking me what the chaps thought, you know what I mean. And,
what did the chaps think?
They were a bit upset at the upheaval, but it soon settled down. And of course, a lot of them had got promotions they'd been looking for. You know, it did give people an opportunity, because despite the number of new people coming in, a lot of them who came in were gunners, and of course, it meant they could. You know, there was a lot of promotion, particularly bombardiers, lance bombardiers, that sort of thing.
Now, you were also re-equipped with new guns and fully re-equipped every way.
Yep, we got absolute brand new equipment. On to the team. I got issues with the Tommy gun there, by the way. Properly issues with the Thompson submachine gun Mark II or whatever. But,
were you taught to fire it? I mean, you did. I mean, you hadn't officially had one, had you? And
really put up to, as they said, up to strength, brought up to strength.
And what vehicle were you and Birkin in now? Was it the same?
We had the 808, but we now had a Marmon Harrington armoured car.
So you had two vehicles?
We had two vehicles.
What was the Marmon Harrington like? The
slab-sided thing, they'd had the turret taken off. So in the top of it, instead of a round turret, it had a big round hole. And the major and myself, we stood in this hole and looked important. We had two, and this time we had two wireless sets. We had the number 11, which was our communication with the battery. And we had a number 9, which was a fierce thing, which had a crystal, would you believe? The crystal would give you so many frequencies.
Now, the number 11 was what you were used to.
The number 11 was the thing we were used to.
How did the number 9, how good was it? I mean, did it work effectively?
I thought it was a pig first. It was older than the 11, and it was big and cumbersome. And as I say, you had to change this crystal when you change frequencies a lot. And that was to put it in contact with the tanks. We had a new wireless operator came to us. At this time, my team was then taking on Frank Knowles. Dave Worley was driving.
So the team.
We got Frank Knowles.
What was he doing?
He was signaler.
As Dave
driver Wally. Dave Wally was driving. And I've forgotten this Welshman's name. It was probably William. It was some Welsh name.
So you had two signallers?
Two signallers.
And then Birkin himself?
And Birkin himself. And one thing I prefer to forget, nastiest, one of the nastiest pieces of work we've met.
What, the Welsh one?
If you spoke to Frank, if Frank's on record in the Imperial War Museum, check it. When we were up in the desert later, he pinched water. And there's no man lower than that.
And this was the Welsh second signaller,
the new one.
We'll come back to that business in the desert when we get up there. Now, there was a lot of new... You were being seen as having a new role, weren't you?
Yes.
And it was very different from the defensive stuff. Absolutely. You've been doing at Tobruk. What training did you do that you remember?
We went out in the desert, past the pyramids, and we practiced this movement where we, first of all, on our own, and dropping into action, because of what you did, you dropped into action on the line of halt action front. The idea was they dropped and fired a shot. You simply shouted down to the room, 5,000, and you said, where the hell's that gone? And did it from there, get into action quickly. The idea was we were going to form this box, infantry, anti-tank, artillery and tanks. And we were going on the outside. So if it was an attack, we'd drop into action and allow the tanks that wanted to get into position to counter-attack. And there was hell to pay about this. None of our officers liked it. And they pointed out 25-pounders that had a good record in the desert, but of course they got badly shot up as well, because they got to let the tanks get too close. And you were open. These were fellows in armour, and we were out in the open.
Now, did Burke, you say all the officers, I mean, would they express that in front of the men or in front of you?
They said in front of me they didn't like it, and they told the gunners weren't happy about it, because they could see, and they told them they were doing what they could to change it. And eventually, I don't know when, but we did get it altered somewhat, so I think the anti-tank gunners were on the flanks and the front, and we got, and the tanks... The tanks operated separately, you see. We dropped them down there, but we were close to them.
Now, and Birkin shared that view.
Birkin shared that view very much. We used to discuss this and moan about it. You know, we were very forcibly. You know, we didn't pull any punches about it at all. The thing we did find with this new system was that our signalling procedure wasn't very good.
In what way? What was wrong with it?
It wasn't quick enough. We sat down, Fred Langford and Major Birkin and some of the officers. We sat down, loads of telephones all strung out. We sat in the middle, since we controlled the whole thing, and worked this procedure out, ironed out the mistakes, and as I said, worked out. As I've said, to such an extent that later on Major Birkin told me he'd escaped from Italy, where he'd been a prisoner, was posted later to another artillery regiment, and he said he fitted in quite well as a captain, which was his war substantive rank, and was able to fall into things because he said their signal procedure was almost exactly the same that we'd worked out on our own.
And you were working out a shortcut?
A shortcut, to make it more efficient. Which was necessary with mobile operations. Exactly what they were, I've completely forgotten. But I know it did work, it made a world of difference, particularly since you got, for that time, because you had more wireless sets, you were better equipped. But it meant that as the battle commander, you've got more people to listen to or talk to.
So it's a way of switching between people. Now, any other new things that came in before you?
No, as I say, the main thing was getting this mobile operation things. And we did go out, and eventually we built up to going out with the complete box and firing.
Now, that, in 21st of April, they moved out up into the desert. And just one thing, it says that at the staging camp at Amaria, there was a big party or something, and the camp sergeant's mess was damaged. Do you remember that?
I wasn't there. I went to the Napa or something with some of the more sober people. I know I didn't go to that party.
What do you know? What did you hear? What had happened?
I heard what had happened. What had happened was at that place, one of our ex-colleagues, Fred Brooks, who'd been our BQMS, he left us, and he was the camp quartermaster at that camp, and he arranged for this party, and a bunch of them. He was a bit of a wild man, Fred, in his day. He's a most respectable civil servant now, or retired, of course. But between them, his new colleagues and our old ones, they actually had some riotous evening, and it was the talk of the matter. I was glad I hadn't gone. I liked a night out, but I didn't really. Wrecking the place wasn't really my style.
How much damage have they done?
I don't know. I know some of them had heard, never confirmed whether they did have to pay or not. It was rumoured they'd got to pay for all the damage.
Now, you went up to Fort Capuzzo to join the 22nd
yep.
Armoured Brigade.
That's right.
And there you were apparently doing a lot of training with your own tank regiments.
Right.
What do you remember about that training?
London, I can remember the colonel, who was a real car, he was. As I said, the rumour was whether he was director of the Bank of England, but he was a really, you could tell that he was a wealthy, well-educated man. What impressed me, he ran this regiment of tanks like a fleet of sailing ships. I thought I was pretty good on the wireless. I'd fancied myself, quite frankly. I thought I could control my lot, you know, with this radio. But he was better than I was. He'd be on his radio, and he'd be, you know, G4, 100 yards to your left. Well, he knew where they all were, and he operated them just like a fleet of ships at sea. And he got far more than I had, and he knew just who was talking to him without code numbers or anything. He was really, saw him later in action, and he was just the same. And of course, what he'd do to us, he'd say, you know, the voice had come through our second, 107, gunfire, wherever. And we'd check what he wanted. We had a bit of a problem with the two radio, with our two wirelesses, because the major, we couldn't have two earphones at once. We solved it to some extent. We hitched a loudspeaker, a tannoy, to one of them, which wasn't ever so good, but we fixed it on top of the, against our round hole. So if an order came through, as well as the signaller hearing it in his headphones, we could hear. So of course then either myself, if the major was on, wanted to speak, he could, if they wanted him, they could pass him the microphone. Frank Noel's favourite trick, when he thought the position was right, was passing him the wrong microphone. So Major Burton think he was talking to the tank commander, and he'd be talking to his battery. And Frank had then said, "Sorry, sir," which sometimes brought down the wrath of heaven, often caused an enormous amount of stuttering, swearing from the... But he only did that, as I say, it's...